Sorry to disappoint you. So what was your expectation? Nah, I'm just an everyday dude. Oh, you expected perfection? This is what Christianity is supposed to be like. I make mistakes. Like, lots of mistakes. I'm just trying to do the best that I can do. I guess I'm just imperfectly human.
Welcome to another episode of the Imperfectly Human podcast. I am your host, Mr. Daly, and I want to thank you for rocking with me for another week. It's been a good week. Just had my birthday, 44. You know how it is. You know how we do. It was good. It was good to spend time with the family. I appreciate all the well wishes and, you know, all the birthday messages I got. You know, the people that consistently check in every year on my birthday. And this is going to sound so wrong, but there's some people that I've stopped from checking in because I've cut all contact with them. Because how do I put this? I don't do pretense. I don't like to pretend that I'm someone's friend. We may have known each other, and we may have been really good friends in the past when we were kids. But the truth of the matter is, we're not really friends anymore. We're acquaintances at best. And, you know, when you start to realize that your values don't line up with someone's values, the way you think doesn't line up with the way that they think, you know, I think the right thing is to just separate yourself. Now, it's not a case of being cruel or anything like that. It's about keeping like-minded people around you. Iron sharpens iron, that kind of thing. So, you know, when I say that I've cut some people out that are not really adding value and stopped them from being able to wish me well on my birthday. That's what I mean. I've just, you know, separated myself from some people that are just not, they're not part of my journey anymore. Doesn't mean there's any malice or ill intent towards them or anything like that. Anyway, this week we're going to jump into some good stuff. I'm excited about what we got coming this on this week's episode. I am looking forward to share what's been on my mind. So, let's do this. Before we jump into the show, I'd like to invite you to subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't done so already, what are you waiting for? It's so simple to do. Head over to your favorite streaming platform, search for the Imperfectly Human podcast, and hit follow or subscribe, dependent on the platform that you are using. It would be greatly appreciated. It goes a long way in supporting the show and helps us keep creating great content for you. I want to know why little kids don't know when to stop talking. That's what I'm talking about today when I'm bringing up this daddy dilemma. So you can take a wild guess who I'm talking about. Of course, none other than the other star of the show, my 5-year-old. This girl does not know when to quit. She doesn't know when to stop talking. And I don't know. I had to dive in and save this child. Because she was about to get all kinds of telling off unleashed on her. Like, she had her mum riled up to the point where she was like, oh, we gonna have words tonight. And it was late. And it's, you know, I'm doing the bedtime routine. And I'm like, oh, I do not need no screaming child. Because if she's screaming and crying, it's going to be a nightmare to get her to sleep. But I'm like, you know it's bedtime. You know what happens every bedtime. But still, you choose not to listen. Then when you get told off, you choose to talk back. When you were told not to talk back, you persist and you continue to talk back. What do you think is going to happen, child? And this girl goes from 0 to 100, like 0 to 1,000. I don't get it. I don't know where she gets that temperament from, because that ain't me. But yeah, she can go from 0 to 1,000, and it always happens at bedtime. Always at bedtime, and she knows the routine. You know, I'm one of these people. I thrive on routine, and I understand the value and the benefit of routine. So I try to keep her in a bedtime routine, meaning when it's time for bed, I give her the 10 minute warning, let's call it that. So we're going to bed, you're going to bed in 10 minutes. She knows when it's time for bed, she gets a story. Then she gets to put on her nightlight and all that stuff. And then we say our prayers. Then she goes to bed. Simple routine. There's other little bits in between, but that's the core of the process. You know, that's the core of the routine. Those are the fundamental things that she focuses on, because she wants her story. You know, she wants, she likes a little heads up, because if I just say, right, bedtime, it becomes a problem. But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter sometimes. You try to help these little people and they wild out and they start talking back and they start losing their little minds, not realizing that their parents about that life. And I'm looking and I'm like, oh, this is gonna go south. Mom's had a stressful day. She's got baby boy in her arms, finally got him settled and rested, and he's sleeping. And here we go with the screaming and crying. I'm like, that's not gonna end well. But she does it all the time. Then when she's getting told off, she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, you caused this. You created this whole situation. You were told to dial it down. You were told to pull it back. You were told to chill out. No, chilling out was not an option. No, I'm going from 0 to 1,000 and nothing you can do is going to stop me. I'm going to talk reckless. I'm going to say stuff that's going to annoy people. That's my child. Anyway, so I'm wondering, does anyone else have this with, I know some of my friends, you know, my friends, I think I said it last week, my boys we all have 5-year-olds. And just the conversations that we've had, I know it's not just me. She's not unique in the sense that she has these little moments. And it seems like all of our kids are going through the same thing. But it's wild. She's got this thing that she does when it's dinner time or when I'm cooking. she will come and look at what I'm cooking and then begin the Spanish Inquisition. What's for dinner? What's in the pot? And who's that for? What are we having it with? Are you sure that's dinner? And I'm just like, you start to just like, stay calm, because in my head I'm thinking, oh no, this little 5-year-old is not asking me what I'm about to put on her plate. Like, she can cook. Like, she can fend for herself. And I just think these little children just, I don't know what it is. And to be fair, I like them to be assertive. I've always encouraged my children to be assertive. I've always encouraged them to speak their mind, but respectfully speak their minds. I think I've said it before, I'm not afraid to admit to them when I'm wrong, because I want them to learn to be able to admit when they are wrong. So the characteristics, the behavior that I want them to demonstrate, I have to demonstrate. Children do not learn from being told. They learn from observing, and they learn from the example that they are given. If you want studious children, you need to be studious. If you want respectful children, you need to be respectful. If you want disciplined children, you need to exercise discipline. So, you know, the characteristics that you want your children to have, you need to demonstrate to them. And that's been, you know, that's the lesson, that's the journey that I'm going on. That's the journey we're all going on, to be fair. She's taken everyone in the house on this journey with her. And, you know, I have to appreciate the personality that she has. I'm glad she's not a carbon copy of me. I'm glad she's not a carbon copy of her mum. I'm glad she is her own person, as God created her to be. And it's about helping her learn how to channel her frustrations, how to respectfully speak her mind, how to manage her emotions so she's a well-balanced individual. That's the journey. That's what we're learning. That's what we're going through. And yeah, I'm interested to know how other people tackle these challenges. How do you do it from a godly perspective? How do you do it from a biblical perspective? How do you make sure that you are operating as God wants you to operate in the area of parenting? And we've talked about parenting on this podcast. There are scriptures to guide us. There are principles when we watch how God is a father to the nation of Israel, how just when we watch the character and the life of Jesus and how he is a father to all. A father to all, a brother to all. It's just the human nature is is weak. I think that's the best way to put it. It's weak. Human nature is weak, and sticking to those biblical principles can be challenging in the heat of the moment. When you are annoyed, your instant reaction is to, you want to shout. You want to yell at them and put them, you know, put them back in their little boxes. But that's not necessarily how to handle the situation. I find, for me, I have to take a breath. Even when she's really pushing my buttons, I have to take a breath and try and stick to the routine. Sit down and have a conversation with her. Make sure she knows that there are consequences. There are always consequences to our actions. And teaching our children that is not wrong. Teaching them from an early age that there is, every action has an equal opposite reaction. So when you do something, you are going to end up with some consequence that you may or may not like. And it's important to know that. So yeah, it's a journey, as I said. It's definitely a journey. It's definitely something I'm learning. The family's learning. We're learning together. But man, this little girl does not know when to quit talking. This week, we're talking about peer pressure and social expectations. So we're continuing on our conversation about men and manhood, you know, the usual. I'm not saying the usual as in, you know, like it's a bad thing. I'm talking about, we got a lot to get through in this, because I really do want to challenge our conception of what manhood is, our viewpoint, our notions, the traditional, and I guess the social expectations, the societal expectations of what manhood is. So men are often pressured, and you know, you would think I'm talking about children here, but everyone is susceptible to peer pressure. Remove the idea that you have of peer pressure in, you know, the visual that comes to mind is that, you know, it's a bunch of kids together encouraging and trying to coerce another child into doing something that they don't want to do. I think that's the most basic form that peer pressure can take. Peer pressure nowadays is far more, it's not even subtle, let's be honest. We stroll into peer pressure. And what I mean by that is we are constantly bombarded with imagery that sort of tries to set the tone and tell us how we should behave. Social media is used as a path for pushing a narrative. We have people called influencers. Influencing someone is applying a level of peer. Depending on the approach, but it could be a form of peer pressure. What an influencer is doing. But an influencer is trying to influence behavior. Clue is in the name. They are trying to get people to either purchase products or use certain services, try out and try to replicate a certain lifestyle and lifestyle choices. And let's be real, there are very few of these influencers that are actually living the lifestyle that they push. Not everyone that you see on social media is real. I saw a funny clip yesterday, and I've seen it as well. There is this AI influencer, an AI account. It's created to represent a black woman. Her facial features are damn near perfect. The physical attributes are, they match the aesthetic that I guess a lot of women think men want. We're not even going to get into the conversation about men and our, what we are attracted to and the attraction to normal bodies and all of that stuff. That stuff is real. I think that's another conversation we really do need to dip into, but that's not for today. But this AI influencer has the aesthetic that women believe men want, and I guess the aesthetic that those toxic alpha males push. And what I mean by that is there is this narrative out here, and I said I'm not going to get into this, but and I'm dipping into it, but there's this narrative out here that a woman must maintain this hourglass, this hourglass figure, this ratio of bust to waist to hips, and it mustn't change as a result of pregnancy, no matter how many children she's had. She's expected to snap back. And it creates this unhealthy, unnatural pressure on women. Now, let me be clear. If a woman chooses to pursue that for herself, that's her prerogative and that's her right to do so. But there shouldn't be, we as men should not be pushing and trying to force them to maintain this aesthetic just because, you know, we find it or we're told that that's what we should find desirable. And a lot of real men don't think like that. A lot of real men are not afraid of stretch marks. A lot of real men are not afraid of the sagging breasts. A lot of real men are not afraid of the changes that child rearing and childbirth cause to the human female form. Actually, we embrace it and we're thankful for it because we understand that that was something that a woman chose to take on to bring a life that we jointly created into this world, to bring our gift into this world and to nurture our gift. It's deep that for me that men want to, to some extent, punish women for bringing in life into the world. I find it ridiculous. I find it dumb. But it happens. It's out there. Anyway, that's another conversation for another time. As I was saying, there is this AI influencer, and the amount of men, because it will be men. What was funny was this guy was like, "This you can clearly see this thing, this person is not real." But there are a ton of men leaving comments under the pictures. Fine. Then there is a paid Patreon account for this AI influencer. And guess what? Men are paying a monthly subscription for exclusive content from this AI influencer. Someone that isn't real. Now, personally, I just think they're dumb. You're dumb. That's just my view of it. Other people might have a different perspective, but I think it's daft. But this is the world that we live in at the moment, where people are obsessed with influencers. It looks like it doesn't matter whether they're real people or AI generated people. People are obsessed with influencers. So when we have these influencers, and we have female and we have male influencers, most people are familiar with the female influencers. Those are the people you see all the time, because I guess we want to say that social media influences women more. I don't believe that's true. I believe social media influences men quite a lot. You will find that a lot of men follow female influencers. You will find that a lot of men secretly watch female influencers. Don't want to know why. And I think the reality is that both men and women are susceptible to the dangers of social media. And one of the big dangers is that peer pressure. It's that narrative, because there is a toxic narrative, not only pushed by these alpha male personas that exist on social media that try to encourage and influence men to behave in a particular way. There are also female voices that push a toxic narrative of what they expect a man to be. You cannot, and I say this respectfully, but please, women, understand that in the same manner that a man cannot tell you how to be a woman, you cannot tell a man how to be a man, because you have never been a man. So let's just make that clear. What you are spouting is what you believe that you need and you want, whether right or wrong, from a man. Let's not even bring up the fact that a lot of women desire toxic traits from men. A lot of women want, they perceive aggression as masculinity. They believe that a man, and I'm jumping into this, so let's just put these out there, because I believe the alpha male personas and these toxic female influencers and toxic voices put the same things out there. So the most common social expectations or things that men may succumb to due to peer pressure include displaying toughness or emotional stoicism. We've talked about the emotional stoicism so many times. Being sexually assertive or aggressive. Avoiding vulnerability or showing weakness. Conforming to traditional masculine stereotypes in appearance and behavior. Pursuing certain career paths or interests to align with societal norms. Suppressing emotional expression, particularly sadness or fear. Engaging in risky behavior to prove masculinity or gain acceptance amongst peers. And those things are obvious. I don't want to say obvious. Then those things are the most common traits that you will come across being pushed. Those are the things that you will see people suggesting that a man does, or a man is. A man is this macho guy that isn't afraid of anything. If you are not afraid of anything, something is wrong with you. Even Jesus, who was God in man form, he was God and took on the form of man. When he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed, he said, Lord, he said, Father in heaven, he basically said, Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. But not my will, but your will be done. If it is possible, let this cup pass me, but not my will, but your will be done. Even though he knew he had the power to overcome death, because he'd overcome death by raising Lazarus from the dead. He'd overcome death by raising the daughter of what was his name? Ah, it's gone out of my head. But the Roman soldier's daughter. He raised her. Jesus was in the habit of conquering death. But he said, if possible, let this cup pass me, but not my will, but your will be done. If that is not, you know, enough evidence that having, you know, being afraid of something, not wanting to go through something is normal, then I don't know what it is. It's the action, the subsequent action is the important thing. Because Jesus said, not my will, but your will be done. He didn't run from it. He said, hey God, I don't want to go through this. I don't want to do this. I would rather not do this. But if this is what you need me to do, then so be it. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with expressing that you are afraid of something. This view that we have to be tough all the time. This view that we have to be emotionally void. This view that being able to express how you feel is a sign of weakness is a problem. And whether we like it or not, the narrative that is pushed across social media, across so many of these accounts and these influencers, male and female, is that you're not a man if you're not a tough guy. I've seen how it ends for tough guys. Or I've seen how the so-called tough guys demonstrate their toughness. I've seen some traumatic stuff, and you know, I'm in the habit of blocking these accounts because, listen, I don't need that nonsense. But there was a video. There was a video of a father going to pick up his son from his ex, and the stepfather, and he gets into an altercation with the stepfather. They're arguing. The stepfather goes in, comes back out with an automatic weapon. The argument continues. Clearly, the father says something that the stepfather doesn't like. The stepfather takes back and fires two shots and puts the boy's father down in front of the boy and the ex and the neighbors. That's toughness, right? That's what we view as being tough guys. Where is the strength in that situation? Whereas two rational, mentally tough, emotionally available men would have sat down and hashed it out and figured out a way to make sure that the person who is most important in that situation, the child, is taken care of. They would have found a way to say, listen, we may not agree on certain things, but what we both agree on is that this child here is the most important person in this situation. So, irrespective of how we may feel towards each other, we need to focus on finding a solution that makes sure that this child knows that they are loved. They are protected. They are cared for. Instead, they took a route that leaves this child with permanent trauma, nightmares, images of seeing your father being shot and killed in front of you. That is the world's view of toughness, of what manliness looks like. There is this perception or this narrative that young men should be sexually assertive or aggressive. I've actually seen it. There's a funny clip where it flips it and the woman becomes a sexual aggressor. And the guy is, it's like a cartoon sketch, but the guy is thrown by it. He's panicking. He doesn't know how to respond to it. He doesn't know how to even accept what is happening. But it makes you think, how do women feel when men are that pushy and sexually aggressive towards them, or sexually assertive? towards them. We forget that we are dealing with human beings. We forget that we are dealing with people with emotions and their own traumas and their own pains and their own challenges. But we choose to push this aggressive, assertive behavior as the norm. And we teach it to the generation coming up. And you might be like, well, I'm not out here talking to my child and saying you need to be like this. No, the videos, the music videos that you allow your children to watch, they already condition them as to how they should treat women. The music that you listen to and you sing along to and you dance to is telling your sons how they should be towards women. The music is telling your daughters how a man should approach them and treat them. Gone are the days where music talked about romance, wining and dining and caring for someone, loving someone unconditionally, all of that stuff. No, what we have in music today is, I want to do A, B, C, and D to you. I want to make you call out my name and all of, we have a narrative that focuses on the wrong things and influences the way that young men approach young women. And they influence it in the most negative and toxic way. But we still play this music. We still buy this music. We still celebrate this music. We say that this music is our culture. So we are now embracing a narrative that says that our culture is to... And again, we're slightly going off topic here. Actually, no, we're not. Our culture is to disrespect each other, black men and black women, and not just black men and black women, men and women. Our culture is to disrespect each other. Our culture is to be violent towards each other. Women violent towards women, men violent towards men. And let's keep it focused on the men. But our culture is now to be violent towards each other. Our culture is to disrespect each other. Our culture is to disrespect our women. Our culture is to encourage and drive our sons to disrespect women from a young age. Our culture is to teach young boys to value material possessions over women. Our culture is to teach young women to value material possessions over their virtue and over sound, safe, non-violent, care-driven relationships, loving relationships. Value material possessions over that. Value a Birkin bag over, the comfort and safety of a provider. A provider is not someone that just purely buys you material things. That is not what provision is, not just about material things. And people might turn around and say, oh, you just say that because you can't provide. You don't know my situation. I provide for my family. That's between me and my family. I know I provide for my family, both in whatever way. Anyway, you can't say that someone that wants to help you understand that provision is more than material is saying that because they can't provide. You can go and speak to some of the richest people in their old age, and they will tell you that they wished that they had spent more time with the ones that they loved. They wished that they had someone in their old age that they could just chill out with and relax with and love on. Because humans are created for connection. Humans are created for relationship. God created us in His image. God desires relationship with us. Therefore, we desire relationship. First and foremost, we should desire relationship with God, but we desire relationship with each other because we are created in God's image. We are created to desire relationship. Not rocket science. But we are teaching each other. We are teaching the wrong things. We are teaching the it's okay to avoid vulnerability. It's okay to not show weakness. Doesn't make sense. How do you foster deep, meaningful relationships when you are afraid of vulnerability and showing weakness? How do you find that person that was created to complete you when you do not want to show anyone the incomplete parts of you? How do you grow and become a stronger person if you are denying your weaknesses? We have this, and I'm going to, you know what, let me, on this next one, let me speak from my own place of truth. Growing up, so I am not the biggest person. My natural body weight centers roughly around 10 and a half stone. So I'm not a big framed person. Now, I watched WWF. That's what it was called in my day. It's now the World Wrestling Federation. Now it's called WWE. But I watched the WWF. I was a big fan of The Ultimate Warrior. I was a big fan of Hulk Hogan and all of these, Bret Hitman Hart. All of these guys, I was like, these guys, I thought they were amazing. And as I grew, as I got older, I thought that look was what, that was a manly look. Big, muscular. So I attempted to get big and muscular. But that wasn't for my body. As soon as I got, so, you know, going to the gym, taking protein shakes, I gained 3 stone. But that 3 stone of extra mass had such an impact on my body. And I think 2009, I made the choice that I'm going to focus on allowing my body to center at its natural, you know, to go back to its natural center. And I will focus on health rather than the aesthetic. And that took a lot of emotional maturity. You know, it's funny because my eldest daughter always, you know, if I say something about my appearance, she will tell me, you are exhibiting characteristics of body dysmorphia. And, you know, we've always strived to encourage them to have body positive images of themselves, a positive view of their own bodies, and then to be And I'm grateful because it means that what we've tried to teach them has sunk in. But I'm also grateful that she's not afraid to point out to me when I am exhibiting unhealthy mindsets about my own appearance, because I am still battling the influence and the peer pressure of what I have been conditioned to believe is the masculine appearance. But you can look like an action figure and not be a man. Appearance has nothing to do with manhood. Manhood is about character. And it's where so many people are lacking. So many people are falling short of the mark because they lack the character that is required to be called and to be defined as a man. That's the reality. You lack the character that is needed to be defined as a man. Some people choose career paths and interests that align to these societal norms. I say pick a career path that makes you happy, but hey ho. I get what they mean. So some men will pursue career paths that are deemed to be, you know, stockbroker or a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, those things that people associate with wealth and good, you know, good standard of living, prestige, social prestige and all of that stuff. But what happened to happiness in what you do? The thing is, we are so focused on material things. We live in a society that drives and that is underpinned by this, the pursuit of wealth and possessions. We are living in a world that is fundamentally driven by idolatry. We worship the inanimate objects that we own, we purchase, we can buy, that can be sold to us. And they become the things that drive us, that motivate us, and that steal our attention from the one that made us. We become obsessed with them. So naturally, we create and we chase after career paths that align to attaining and being able to accumulate those material possessions. Find, when God created Adam, he gave Adam work. He didn't give Adam a job. He gave Adam work. He gave Adam something that fulfilled him. Something that gave him purpose. When he gave Adam work, there was no monetary exchange. There was nothing. It was not about what Adam gained from a material perspective. It was about fulfillment. It was about completion. It was about responsibility. But as we have moved to a world where we call the shots and we define the standards and we define what is good and what is great and what is the norm and what is acceptable and what isn't, we have skewed what work is. In fact, we have done away with work and replaced work with jobs. Because a job is something that you do to earn money. It's not something that you love. It's not something that you enjoy. It's something that you do to get by. Work is something that is intrinsically connected to who you were created to be, where the money is not even a factor. The money is a symptom of you doing and completing your work. It's a byproduct. It is a blessing that you receive for something that you would do for free. I believe it's more important to find what you were created to do and to make that your work than it is to get a job and to live out your days being a slave to material possessions. Society also encourages us to behave, to engage in risky behavior, just to prove that we are manly. And you see the dumb things that people do. There's a skit that myself and my friend find so funny, and it's a guy and him and his girlfriend were in a restaurant, and well, it starts with she gets into the car and he gets into the car afterwards, and his shirt is all ripped up and he's got two black eyes, and he was like, why did you have to run your mouth off? It wasn't enough when that first guy jumped me, the second guy jumped me, the third guy jumped me, the fourth guy jumped me. You just kept running your mouth off. You just had to keep going. You couldn't stop even after they gave me the two-piece combo. And it's funny. Don't get me wrong. It's a funny skit, but it helps in conveying this message that I'm trying to get across here. That sometimes as men, we put ourselves in situations or we feel that we have to engage in a situation that is risky and dumb just to prove that we are manly. You do not need to fight someone to prove that you are manly. There is nothing wrong in trying to verbally resolve conflict. I saw a great video where two men disagreed because one felt the other one cut him up. And they got out of the cars and, you know, someone was filming it. And these two men both verbally expressed their frustration, came to an agreement, told each other they appreciated each other, hugged it out, and went about their day. Violence is not masculine. Having the mental fortitude and acumen to resolve conflict verbally and to find a safe resolution where both parties can return to their families intact with their dignity. That's manly. As a man, you should seek to protect other men. Not constantly be willing, you know, looking for an opportunity to exercise your dominance, your physical dominance, because you believe you have some level of physical dominance over people. It's more manly to protect those who are weak. Or who may not as be as, let me not call them weak, who may not as be as strong as you. And I will say that social media, peer pressure is not, you know, that it's not just been that. I've talked a lot about the negative impacts. There have also been some positive impacts. There is a rise in people challenging toxic masculinity, and people's views and approach are encouraging people to speak up and to challenge toxic masculinity. There's been a rise in I don't want to say influencers, but I guess influencers encouraging men to take better care of themselves. Yes. A lot of this is focused on the aesthetic, but there is also a voice, a narrative that is pushing and encouraging men to deal with their emotional issues, the blockages, the stoppers, the things that keep them trapped in negative mindsets. Deal with that. There are people, and I guess I may be one of those voices, that are talking to men about accepting the diverse body types. Accept, you know, have a positive body image, irrespective of what your body looks like. You don't have to be unrealistically muscular. Your body may not even be designed to handle that. Your genetics may not lean towards that. You might, like me, I am genetically predisposed to having a smaller frame, and I've come to accept it. So I focus on having the best frame that I can have. I try to keep myself toned, well-defined, building as much muscle as possible, but not focused on trying to get huge, because getting huge is not what my body was designed for. Accept what you've been given and love what you've been given. And learn from each other, learn from our cultures. And I'll say it here, I've said it before, but I'll openly say it here again. Hip-hop is not a culture. Hip-hop is a genre. Stop trying to turn something that is plagued with negativity into a culture for black people. It's not a culture. And when people push it and try and tell you that it is your culture, hip-hop is not your culture. Do your search through your history. Go back, see what your people did in, hundreds of years ago. It wasn't hip hop. Hip hop is a new thing. Hip hop is a genre. Let's talk about what it is. I'm not trying to belittle hip hop, but I'm not trying to push it. Also, I'm not going to accept that notion that it is a culture, and therefore what it stands for represents the norms of behavior within the black community. It doesn't. Learn from the different cultures. Learn from Caribbean men. Learn from African American men. Learn from British black men. Learn from African men. Learn to take the positives and help to challenge the negatives within the vast the vast spectrum of manhood and diverse cultures that we have on this planet. Learn from Japanese men and their culture. Learn from Korean men and their culture. Learn from Chinese men and their culture. Learn from Indian men. There are positives in every culture, and there are negatives. Let's focus on learning from the positives and challenging the negatives. Yeah, let me just jump in about, let me just jump in and give some scriptures and just on some of the stuff that the Bible says about peer pressure. So Proverbs 13:20, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Think about the company that you keep. If you keep wise people around you, you become wise. But if you surround yourself with fools, they lead you to destruction. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. As we've said, manhood is manhood is not about your appearance. It's not about your material possessions. It's not about those things. It is about your character. And if your character is weak, if your character is flawed, then you can't claim to be a man. You need to learn to exhibit the character and, you know, the characteristics of a man. And we've talked about that. Go back. I can't remember which episode it was, but it was early in this series. We talked about the godly or the characteristics of God that translate into manhood. Romans 12:2. Do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. As men, it is important that our foundation is the blueprint that was left for us. Learn to focus and to dedicate yourself to the Word of God, to make that the foundation of where you find your definition of manhood. Change the things that you allow to influence you. Change the music that you listen to. Change the content that you watch. Change the accounts that you follow. Change the voices that you listen to. Change the counsel that you seek. And make sure that they align with what is your foundation. That way, you keep renewing your mind and staying focused on what God's will is and not what your will is. James 4:4. You adulterous people, don't you know that that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. If we conform to societal norms, we are rejecting God. And therefore, we are choosing to become enemies of God, because we know that what we see around us is darkness. What we see around us does not represent the characteristics that God desires from us. So why choose that and choose to be an enemy of God and to run in darkness when you can live a life full of light, a life pleasing to God? As men, it's also important that we speak up for the people that are marginalized, because we should be protecting those who cannot protect themselves, those who are vulnerable. And that is one of the characteristics of manhood. So Proverbs 31:8-9, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly, defend the rights of the poor and needy. Isaiah 1:17, learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow. Matthew 25:35-36, for I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. And I love that one, because that is Jesus telling the disciples, and he's talking to the disciples and he's explaining what it means to be his hands and feet in this world. These are the things that we are called to do to represent Christ in our communities and in this world. Yet they're the things that we do the least of. Galatians 2:10. All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor. The very thing I had been eager to do all along. We cannot neglect the needs of the marginalized, the oppressed, the vulnerable, the needy. All I want to say with this is that be careful what you allow in. Be careful what you take in and allow to influence and to steer and direct your mind. Because not every influence is good influence. So, we're at the end of the show. I've done it again. I've missed out on soul searching. And it was a good one. It was a good one. But you know what I'll do? Next week, I will do soul searching first. Because the one I had lined up was a doozy. But I do appreciate the conversation that we've had today. I think it's a valuable conversation because of where we are in society today and how much social media influences and drives the behavior of everyone, I guess. It's easy to say that we are not influenced or driven by social media. And for those that don't actually engage with it, you may not engage with social media, but I still believe that to a certain extent we are influenced by social media. The most, let's put it this way, The apps are not the only form of social media that exists nowadays. Radio, to me, is social media. You are being influenced by someone's perspective on radio. Reality TV is social media, and we are bombarded with that. Anything that is presented to influence the way that you think and behave is social media. Magazines are social media. So let's broaden our thinking and understand that there are so many mediums that push an agenda, a narrative. Some of these narratives are dangerous, especially when you are trying to be a man that lives a biblical, a sound biblical life. When you want to be a man that represents what God wants you to represent, when you want to be a man that speaks on the things that God wants you to speak on, that takes action where God wants you to take action, that is obedient, then be careful what you allow to influence you. Be careful what you allow to infiltrate your mind. Bad company corrupts good character. That's what the scripture says. So choose your content wisely, choose your circle of friends wisely, and don't succumb to that endless barrage of peer pressure. Till next time, I've been Mr. Daily. I'll catch you soon. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Imperfectly Human podcast. Remember to subscribe and share this podcast. You can do this on your favorite streaming platforms.